Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, folks, we've got a great conversation coming up today on the Michael Steele podcast with none other than Evan McMullen, former CIA officer and senior advisor to Congress. He is the founder of Stand Up Republic, which is a nonprofit that was focused on uniting Americans across party lines, defending our democracy and replacing extremist politicians. He's currently a candidate for the U.S. Senate, running as an independent with the support of Democrats and Republicans in the great state of Utah, running against Senator Mike Lee. It's a great conversation. I know you're going to get a lot out of it as we talk about not only how he came to put together this effort, but what it may mean for the future of American politics as more and more Americans are seeking a third lane in which to exercise their independence as voters. My conversation with Evan McMullen coming up next on the Michael Steele podcast. Well, like I said, I am very happy to grab this brother off the campaign trail for just a moment to stop into the podcast to say hello. None other than senatorial candidate for the great state of Utah, Evan McMullen. Welcome to the Michael Steele podcast, bro.
Great to be with you, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. Good to see you.
Absolutely. It's good to see you. You're looking great. As I told him before we started, folks, I don't know how he's maintaining that boyish charm, you know, that look of innocence out there, given the slings and arrows that a campaign puts you through. But as he noted, the kids help. The little ones always have a way of keeping us focused and fresh, right?
Yeah, that's right. We've got five of them around here, so it's always a lot of fun. And you know, they've gotten involved actually too. We're into the general election, obviously, now here in Utah. We've passed through the primary. We'll talk about all that, but you know, we're cutting ads, and you know, they've eagerly appeared and played major roles in a couple of them, and they're having fun with it.
That is so cool. That is so cool. It, you know, I remember when I ran for the U.S. Senate in 06, and my boys were much older than your children. They were just starting high school and about to get out of elementary school. And I had to negotiate cutting ads with the kids. It wasn't this sort of, oh, daddy, can we be in your commercial? It was like, really? Okay, what do you want me to say? Okay, really?
Yeah.
Really?
They've got fees, they've got whole, they've
oh,
got
yes,
compensation
you know,
structures.
Absolutely, I had to go talk to their agent, you know.
Yeah, contracts.
Right. That was their mother.
Yeah.
Right. So you have done something that you and I actually talked about a year before you actually announced, which was how to begin to rebrand the narrative in our politics, given the poison that had been injected into it over the last few years by Trumpism and sort of the negative narratives pushed out by a lot of GOP leaders and operatives about creating something that sort of begins to strip away, or at least eats at this notion of hard partisanship to get people to focus on good leaders and the kind of men and women who are prepared to stand not on top of the Constitution, but to stand with the Constitution. And you have seemingly done that in your bid to become the next senator from Utah. You certainly broke out in your run for the presidency in 20 16 as a declaration at that time of, oh no, no, we cannot do this Trump thing. Right. But now you have, you know, matured that process into something that has a lot of people looking at how, hey, maybe this is the way to go. Tell us a little bit about the strategy you employed there and how effective it's been in getting you, as you just noted, into the general election with the support of Democrats.
Yeah, well, look, I would say, first of all, as you pointed out, you know, we're in this period of great division and extremism in the country. And you and I both know, Michael, that the extremes can't govern. They just can't. Right. They're committed to rote, you know, party loyalty and rote ideological orthodoxy. And it makes it really hard in a world that's changing as quickly as ours is to respond to all the crises that we're facing and to govern through them when you're so beholden to special interests and party bosses and extremist organizations and, you know, just old ways of thinking about issues that have been politicized. And you just start to not be able to govern. And that's certainly what I think we're seeing in today's political landscape, especially with the Republican Party. I think the Democrats have their own challenges too. But our challenges are mounting as a nation, and we feel them very acutely here in Utah. You know, we're in a major drought, cities are trucking in water, our air quality is so bad that at times our kids' soccer games get canceled. And boy, that's something I never thought I would see. Those are real community events. The whole family shows up, you know, they
right.
meet with the neighbors and enjoy, you know, watching a kid's soccer game with our soaring mountains in the background. I mean, it's a treat, but now those things get canceled because our air quality is so bad. So, you know, high cost of healthcare, inflation, gas prices, all of this. And so there's just an opportunity for a better way forward, for another way forward, because there's political demand for it. People want more unifying and effective leadership, and they're willing to part with old party loyalties to some degree in order to make it happen. And so here in Utah, you know, I'm running as an independent because the Republican Party was going to renominate Mike Lee, who has become, you know, a symbol of the far right, certainly. Mm-hmm. The Democrats are not competitive in statewide races here. So what I said is, look, a majority of Utahns want to replace Mike Lee. They're divided between these different factions, principled Republicans, Democrats, and independents. And I went to those factions and said, yep, none of us alone are going to replace Mike Lee. So we've got to come together. We're going to have another 6 years of Mike Lee, which you know, a majority of Utahns don't want. So I went to the Democratic Party and I said, you know, please join my campaign rather than nominating someone else. I went to the United Utah Party and I said, it's a, you know, minor third party, but one that could win 50,000 votes in a race like this, that could be decisive. They agreed not to. Also, they voted to join my campaign rather than nominating somebody else. I went to major principled Republican leaders in the state and asked them to you know, not support Lee, but to join our efforts. And so it's working out. Democrats have voted to join our campaign. United Utah Party, same thing. We have 30% support among Republicans already, and we only
really,
we need 23% or so to win. I'd love to have 40-50%, but that may, we'll see what happens. But if we win to about 23% of Republicans, then we win this race. So that's where we are. We've got about 30% support among Republicans already, and just today we're starting paid media in Utah. I mean, our major ad campaign, we've done some targeted ad campaigns already, but you know, we're running our first ad about my service in the CIA, introducing me again to the state in a major way. And we're very optimistic about where this will lead.
So to the point you just made, there was a great piece back in April by my friend, our friend, you know, Jennifer Rubin, at the Washington Post, who wrote, Evan McMullen is no progressive. As a former undercover CIA agent, which is one of my favorite things about you, he's very much in the mold of the late Senator John McCain or President George H.W. Bush, the sort of fiscally responsible, hawkish, and deal-making conservative who, with few exceptions, has virtually disappeared from the national scene. What I found interesting about that quote about you, not only the truth of it, but the appeal of it to Democrats in a state like Utah. You know, when you have this sort of national narrative out there about, you know, Democrats being so far progressive and so far left and so uninterested in common sense governing, you know, center right policies, et cetera. So in other words, cutting deals, center left policies, you're kind of proving that there is a brand of Republicanism, which is a brand I fashion myself after, that still has appeal to a broader swath of voters out there. So you're beginning this effort, as you did, going to Democratic leaders in your state, and even some nationally, to say, hey, let's take a look at the state. We may have a way here to create a new model, which is the gist of Jennifer's piece. She goes on to talk about how your campaign really can serve as a national model, but also how we can begin the slow but steady process of reestablishing democratic principles with principled leaders. Have you found Democrats responsive to that sort of, you know, brand of John McCain, George H.W. Bush, fiscally responsible, hawkish, deal-making conservative?
You know, what I would say is that I think over the last several years, especially with the threats to our Democratic Republic being what they've been, I mean, they culminated, of course, with January 6th, but they haven't stopped, as you know,
right,
and as Jennifer Rubin knows, and many others have written. But I think there's a broad recognition among this coalition, the Republicans, the Democrats, the independents who are part of this here in Utah, that the Republic is at risk. That
right.
We can't play around anymore. It's time for us to stand up and defend our system of self-government, you know, our democracy, or we're going to lose it. And we came very close to that, I think, on January 6th after the election. And our very own Senator Mike Lee was a key part of that. And so I think that's the first thing. It's the most basic thing. There are so many things still that this coalition, elements of it, disagree upon, but there is a lot that they agree upon, and that's the first thing. But they also, I think we're finding, and this has been developing over the past several years, you know, we're not able to take this strategy in Utah out of nowhere. Over the past several years, I believe these elements nationally and in Utah have realized that they actually do have quite a lot of common ground on a lot of issues. So take another one, you know, we're facing some very serious issues with regard to climate in Utah. They're so tangible, they're affecting our daily lives in a very serious way. And so now you have a cross-partisan coalition in Utah that wants to be more responsible and live up to our responsibility of stewardship for the environment, because we just have to. It's a public health issue. And so there's so many other issues on even fiscal issues. Yes,
right.
there's a cross-partisan coalition here that recognizes that a $31 trillion debt is a problem, especially as we raise interest rates to combat inflation caused in part by overspending at times. So, you know, there is, I think, a lot of common ground that we're finding. I don't know that, you know, Democrats would say, or Republicans involved in this would say, you know, that they view this as an old style of Republicanism, but perhaps it is. I think it's more about the expediency of needing to defend our democracy and overcome major challenges that are becoming really unbearable.
Yeah, I think Walter Shapiro, in a companion piece written for, I guess, Roll Call at the same time, noted that point you just made. And I appreciate you coming back to that, because I want to be clear that, you know, I'm not saying that, oh, you know, this is, you know, traditional Republican politics. What my point is, and Walter says it here, he says, quote, but ideological checklists aren't the point. the underlying message in the Utah Democrats' endorsement of McMullen is the same one that has animated the January 6th committee in the House in the battle against the forces out to nullify free elections. You take your allies where you can find them without worrying about the litmus tests. And that's the key thing. We have all day long, folks, to piss on each other's shoes about whether we raise taxes or lower taxes, whether we, you know, impose a national healthcare standard or we don't. You know, we have the capacity to have those discussions. At least we used to. We Right. seemingly have lost the capacity to have those discussions because we are much more driven by cult of personality politics, litmus test politics, the kinds of politics that a lot of folks, clearly in Utah, but I'd even say nationally, that Mike Lee and Republicans like him have come to symbolize. And if they haven't symbolized it directly in their actions, like a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Matt Gaetz, when they just go off the deep end with stupid, they have symbolized it by their acquiescence and acceptance of this poison that's being injected into the political system, where I can't negotiate a good deal on infrastructure, the economy, on healthcare, on the border with my Democratic or Republican opponents because I'm beholden to a sycophantic mindset that says I have to own the libs or I have to eliminate, you know, these, you know, fascist Republicans. You know, all Republicans are this, all Democrats are that. And what I've, you know, again, you know, full disclosure to our friends who are listening, you and I have been talking about this for a long time. So for us, this is nothing new. What you've stumbled upon, and I wouldn't say stumbled, actually, I'd say have been very conscious of creating is a pathway that, going back to the idea of a model, that campaigns around the country can look at as an opportunity to begin to break down that poison that's in the system. I give you, for example, that you've got candidates that are running, you know, in various state races around the country that are modeling themselves after the same kind of effort that you're putting forward here in Utah, in the state of Washington and elsewhere, where you've got, you know, candidates who are saying, yeah, let me go see if I can negotiate a better deal with all the interested parties. Right. And that, you know, when you look at our friend Chris Vance running out for the state Senate in Washington state, who was with me at the RNC when I was national chairman, you kind of see hope. You kind of see, okay, there's something here. How do you feel about that? And what do you think the prognosis is when you going forward to have more and more candidates sort of looking at the McMullen model?
I think we will see more. I mean, especially if one of us or more than one of us are successful in this cycle or even come close. And right. Look, I think it's about choices. You know, I mean, voters demand choices, and so often in our system these days, they just don't have them. You know, here in Utah, for example, if we hadn't done what we're doing, you know, Mike Lee, you know, would have been the Republican nominee still. Democrats in Utah are not competitive in statewide elections. That's a whole other thing. We can unpack that.
Right.
But it just is what it is. So Mike Lee's thinking, look, I'll just cater to the extremes who will get me through the Republican convention, and then I'll be able to get through the primary if there is a primary. We have a complicated system here in Utah, but then I'm off to the races. There's no real general election competition, and voters just don't have a choice. But you know, that's where our system is sort of breaking down and failing, is because of various corruptions of it. Here in Utah, we've got a very gerrymandered state, so there's not free and fair competition in U.S. House races, there are various various other challenges with our system that I think need to be reformed. But the bottom line is, where there's a lack of real choices for voters and where things aren't going well in terms of public policy, we're not solving problems, there's a real political market demand for something else. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what I'm responding to here in Utah. And I think that's what Chris is responding to in his race in Washington. And I know others around the country, you know, I saw that an independent now is running in Missouri against Eric Greitens. You know, John Wood, I believe is his name. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleman named Clint Smith in Arizona who's challenging Andy Biggs as an independent. That's another district where a Democrat isn't going to win. I believe there is a Democrat in the race who, you know, isn't actively campaigning, raising money, but he's in the race anyway. So it's a little bit different. But Clint Smith in Arizona is building a cross-partisan coalition in the same way I am, in the same way Chris Vance is. And I think that, yes, this is a model that we will see likely more of. I think it's needed, and it is a realistic way to innovate in the system that is not pie in the sky. It's a practical approach to giving voters a better choice. And you know what? I'll say this, Michael. You know, and then stop talking here. But you know, independents usually run, as you know, I've been there, done that. They run against both sides equally. I'm going to take on the duopoly and the two parties and all of that. What I'm suggesting here with this race is that the better way to do it is to build cross-partisan coalitions. Right. And so don't think that you as an independent, you know, are likely to take on two massive party machines and win. You know, it's not David and Goliath. It's David and Goliath times two. You're just not going to do it, because while you're slinging a stone at one David Goliath, the other Goliath is going to come knock you over the head.
Right.
Well,
I was going to say that, so that begs two questions. The first is, how have you been, or what has your relationship with the Republican Party been like? How has your effort here affected that? And how has it affected your relationship with the Democrats? So you've got these two Goliaths, as you put it. You're now, you know, you're seemingly have kind of cut a deal with one of them partly, but then there's the broader narrative for Democrats as well. So how do you see your relationship with them? And the second one is the validity, viability of an independent effort, an independent party effort. Is there room right now for that to emerge along with or on the heels of efforts like yours and Chris Vance, for example? So how do you see those two pieces you literally are building the plane as you're flying it. So how do you see those Goliaths who represent some turbulence in the flight path along with, you know, picking up passengers along the way?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, elements of the Goliaths are or majorities, you know, on the Democratic side, it's a majority of Democrats who want to replace Mike Lee, of course, and recognize that they are unable to do it alone, just like independents can't do it alone, and nor can principled Republicans. But on the, you know, so on the Republican side, though, you've got, you know, 40% of Republican primary voters shockingly voted against Mike Lee just a couple of weeks ago in the Republican primary here. I would have predicted days before it would have been about 30%. So the fact that it was about 40% was good news for us.
Well, that's good news, yeah.
But basically, these are Republicans who feel like they feel as unrepresented by Mike Lee as Democrats do, really. I mean, these are people who are deeply offended by various things he's said and done, and they think he's ineffective. They think he embarrasses Utah. And they think that what he did in trying to overturn our election, our republic, because it wasn't just an election. Had he succeeded in his plan that for which he advocated to the White House, Mike Lee,
yes, he did, yep,
to find what he called alternative electors, because he thought that, as he said to the White House, that was the best way for this to be successful. Had they succeeded, that would have been the end of the republic. I mean, let's be clear. We talk about their efforts to overturn the election. you know, you overturn the election in that way, you right. overturn the republic. That's the
what
whole
thing happens here, folks. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are, you know, there are 40% of Republicans, you know, about who feel very unrepresented by Mike Lee. You know, you have to remember how Mike Lee came to power. He came to office during the Tea Party wave and right. In the Republican convention out here. So he convinced, you know, Republican delegates, you know, about 2,000 of them, the majority of them, that our perfectly respectable Senator Bennett didn't respect the Constitution. And that was it. You remember
Dude,
that.
Dude, you are talking to the guy who was part of the origin story. I just come in as chairman. I'm like, what the hell are they doing in Utah? Yeah, Mike Bennett, yeah. What are you doing to me? You're killing me. So
there was not even a primary given the way the system worked that yeah. way. So if you were, you know, if you were a Republican in that time and you weren't a delegate, there weren't, you know, a couple thousand, if you weren't one of them, then you just lost a perfectly respectable Republican senator and got Mike Lee instead. And so there's my point is just that the reason this works is that the system has not right. served people here across party lines since at least 2010 when that happened. And people are so over time, I mean, it's now been 12 years and people are demanding change because it's been, you know, they've been unsatisfied for over a decade, very much so with the result. And that's what allows that, you know, that coalition building to happen. And I think you asked about, you know, a third party or a broader independent mm-hmm. movement, you know, yes, in this climate of, you know, the country being so divided that it appears to be coming apart. You see polls showing that young Americans think, you know, a shocking number of young Americans think it's possible that we'll have another civil war in their lifetimes. Yeah. I mean, I hope that's not the case, but the fact that that's even in their right. heads right. is concerning. So I think all of that creates an opportunity. It's just like a, you know, a business responding to a, you know, a signal from the market that, hey, you know, we want cars that fly now and we're tired of driving on the road and somebody's going to offer it.
Right. We are having a great conversation with my friend, Evan McMullen, who is a candidate for the United States Senate, independent candidate for the United States Senate from the great state of Utah. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to the aspiring senator, what a Senator McMullen would look and sound like right after this.
What was it like to cover President Donald Trump? Hi, I'm Deborah J. Saunders, former White House correspondent for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I was not one of the stars you'd see in the front two rows of the briefing room. I was in the back of the room or standing in the aisles before I got a seat. It was not fake news. It was my life. I get up in the morning and see what the most powerful man in the world wrote on Twitter overnight or blurted out during a call-in to a morning news show. Then try to make sense of it all. I should give a warning. There is adult language, although not necessarily from the mouths of adults. Covering the Trump White House feels much better in the rearview mirror. This is Trailing Trump, notes from the back of the briefing room.
Premiering June 14th on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele, and as you know, we're having this conversation with a guy who shook the political world a bit back in 2016 with an independent run for the presidency to, in one sense, protest, but in another sense, raise high a flag, a warning about the direction the country was headed in 2016. A lot of those concerns have since played themselves out. He's now a candidate for the U.S. Senate in Utah, Evan McMullen. So what should we expect from Senator McMullen?
Well, what I'm committed to is putting the people of Utahns first and serving my constituents, not special interest groups, not party bosses, not parties. I'm going to just put my people first. That's what I want to do. That's what excites me, the possibility of doing that. You know, I'm not taking any PAC or special interest group money, because even though many people warned me, you won't be able to raise the money you need to run this race if you don't do that. They're smart people. I appreciated the advice. But it's, you know, our money in politics has really been one of the corrupting forces. And so when I say that I'm running as an independent, it's not just I'm not a member of a party. It's that I want to be independent of other forces that get in the way of simply serving one's constituents. Mm-hmm. And so that's the way, you know, that's the way I'll serve as a senator. And, you know, I'm going to be, if we prevail, I'll be an independent in the Senate, standing between two parties, certainly in coalition, as I say, with other pro-democracy senators. You know, that's a cross-partisan group, just as our coalition is cross-partisan. But I'm going to work with anybody and everybody who wants to do something good for Utah and for the nation. And that means that, you know, if there's a senator or a group of senators who I disagree with 90% of the time, I'll work with them on the 10% of things we agree with. And that's got to be the way that our system functions. So, you know, I imagine that that running and if we winning this way, will make Utah and our coalition in Utah and beyond the most powerful political coalition in the country. Because it will mean in a divided Senate, and the Senate will still be very closely divided no matter what after this election. May not be as divided as it is right now, but it will be closely divided. The vote that we will have through this seat, you know, Utah and this coalition, will make it incredibly influential. We will be one of the final votes on most important pieces of legislation, if not all of them. And we will use that to do a tremendous amount of good, and hopefully pull parties back towards, you know, back towards the majority of Americans who want effective common sense governance.
Well, one of the first big votes that you'll have to cast will be for majority leader. And I'm sure you've had to, you know, address that issue at some point in this process. Have you reconciled in your head how you leverage that between those two Goliaths that will be arguably competing for that vote, particularly as you noted, if the Senate remains closely divided? I think Democrats hold the Senate, quite honestly. I think when you look at the candidates that are running in places like Arizona and Pennsylvania and Ohio, you just sort of shake your head and go, okay, I don't think the GOP is going to be getting in Georgia. I just don't think they're going to be picking up her, you know, the Senate with Herschel Walker.
Right.
So that puts you in a very commanding spot as a U.S. Senator coming in the door, holding the votes of Republicans, independents, and Democrats from Utah.
Yes, that's right. You know, I've pledged not to caucus with either side. I'll say that. You know, and the reason for that is I do believe that maintaining independence is the kind of representation that Utah needs, and it's the kind of leadership that the country needs from Utah, frankly, and from this coalition. So I've pledged to maintain my independence. If I say I'm going to caucus with one side or the other,
immediately becomes partisan.
Yeah, right. And then the other part of the coalition drops off, and I've got to be able to look, you know, Republicans, Democrats, and independents in the eye in Utah and say, you are an equal part of this coalition, and I'm committed to representing you. So I'm not going to caucus. And the two caucuses, they'll decide, you know, who leads them. I won't have a say in that. That's true. What I will say is that my priorities are defending American democracy and standing up to the extremists that threaten it, lowering healthcare costs, lowering inflation, getting our fiscal house in order, protecting our air and water in Utah and nationally.
Right.
And then making sure I come from a national security background, having served with the CIA. And so I want to make sure that we remain a strong nation militarily or from a national security sense more broadly, and a lot goes into that. But those are my priorities. And, you know, I will use my influence in the Senate to the maximum extent I can to achieve, you know, results on those things. So in the Senate, if we prevail and I'm there, you know, I will, you know, I'm sure have a lot of conversations and figure out, you know, what, you know, how best can I position myself and who, you know, with whom will I be able to get things done for Utah and the country. Now I'm going to do that as an independent, but just as I'm forming a coalition here in Utah to win this race, I will form coalitions in the Senate to get things done on those and other important issues.
Well, you'll have some immediate friends that I can think of, you know, coming into that effort. Both Democrats and Republicans, obviously, or Murkowski or the junior senator from Utah, former governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, who, you know, has both state and federal experience and knows the nuances of things like that. And certainly on the Democratic side, a number of Democrats and like, as you know, some of the new folks who may be coming into the Senate, Fetterman from Pennsylvania, for example, seem like the kind of Democrats who would be looking for those, that coalition. So having that in place, how are you dealing with now or being impacted now, but certainly will be impacted by issues that are not necessarily listed on the priority list of things that you're looking to take with you to Washington? As you mentioned, you know, environmental issues, national security issues coming out of both the needs of the state and your background. But do you also then have, for example, birth control? Now the Supreme Court has changed the conversation on that, and there may be one way or the other efforts to promote or prevent national, federal legislation on abortion. Certainly gun control is another one on the heels of the devastating killing of the innocents that we've seen from Buffalo to Uvalde. How does a Senator McMullen look at those issues from the independent perch that you're trying to create?
Well, yeah, it's such an important question, Michael, because certainly I have my priorities that I think are critical for Utah and for the nation, but there are other things going on, as you point out as well. Look, I think, you know, in Utah, we have two clear examples of different styles of senator, right? So you have Senator Romney, who you mentioned, who I consider to be a good friend,
yep,
who is, you know, in the room where it happens, to put it in Hamilton speak, right?
Yeah.
Every time, every time there's an important bill or an important discussion going
true,
on.
True, he is. He's there.
There. And you know what? Every single American in this country, everybody listening to this podcast, I don't care what state you're in, you know, you should expect that, in my opinion, both of your senators take that approach, because that's right, where you have the most influence. That's where your voice is heard. Well, with Senator Lee here in Utah, we have another style, and his style is one that's more about performative obstructionism than it is about constructive governance. And so for Senator Lee, it's all about, you know, voting no all the time while offering no real feasible alternatives, and then going on cable news and beating your chest about our lost constitution, which you betrayed yourself in 2020. You know, and it's just, it's all performative. It's just, there's no results. In 12 years of service, Mike Lee has passed 4 bills, one of them named a post office, one of them named a veteran center, and 2, I think, for land swaps. You know,
the old reliable post office.
Oh yeah, you know, when you're in trouble, you know, that's what you get done. It's funny, you know, you know, I spent a few years working in Congress as a national mm-hmm. security advisor, and then the chief policy director for the House Republicans. You know, a lot of Americans don't realize this, but you know, the Freedom Caucus guys, you know, the extreme guys, frankly, on either side of the political right. spectrum, they get nothing done.
Nothing.
They get nothing done. And they, you know, they raise lots of money and they're on cable television a lot. They get nothing done, and their constituents
so suffer. True.
So what kind of approach would I take? I would take one very similar to that of Senator Romney, in the sense that I'm going to be in the room where it happens. And yeah. because I think that's the job. It's not just voting no on things. Sometimes you do got to be the only guy to vote no. I get that. But Mike Lee is always that guy. And even on things that are, that really make a lot of sense. Like, you know, last year there was a vote on a water infrastructure bill, and Mike Lee, who represents the second driest in the state in the union, that's experiencing a mega drought, voted against it. There were a lot of conservative senators who voted for it, but not him. He and Ted Cruz voted against it. And that's just the kind of thing. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to use the influence that we will have positioned between the parties to be in the room where it happens, to hold the principle, yes, but find common ground to solve problems. And that's, I've been saying that throughout the campaign. That's the way we do things on a good day here in Utah. We have that kind of leadership, and it's rooted deeply in our culture and in our history as a state. But you see it reflected by Senator Romney's leadership and by the leadership of a certain group of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate. And I will be part of that group.
As I let you get ready to head back out on the campaign trail, and again, I really appreciate your taking a few moments, because I know as a former party official and chairman, and certainly as a candidate, this is precious time when you're trying to reach voters. But
it's well spent talking with you, Michael.
No, I appreciate that, brother. I really do. Our country has been in the throes of some of the most powerful, impactful, revealing discoveries and conversations coming out of the January 6th Commission ever in my lifetime in politics, to listen to the narratives of senators, congressmen, a president, literally try to overthrow an election, overturn the results of a duly certified election. What's your take, particularly given the involvement that we are aware of, and there may be more that's released as the January 6th Commission committee does its work, that, you know, regarding, you know, Mike Lee and others out there who had a direct hand, who were in the room in the wrong way. How do you see the impact of this hearing, what it means for the country going forward, particularly when this is done, because you will be coming into the Senate, assuming, as the conventional wisdom holds, that Democrats lose the House and Republicans take the House, all of this work will be eviscerated by the Republican majority in the House, probably with the helping hand of some Republicans in the Senate as well, to investigate the investigators. So this is really a pivotal moment for the work of this committee. How do you see it resonating with the voters there in Utah? And how do you see it impacting the work you will do as a U.S. Senator as you stand on that perch, on that wall for democracy?
Well, I certainly like that imagery, Michael. I think it is important to make a stand. You know, I've been thinking recently about, you know, just how fragile our American experiment is. You know, I think that there's a sense, you know, if you know, there's a sense among many Americans that, look, America will always just be America. Although I think that's changing now.
Yeah, I think it's changing too. I agree.
Yeah, you know, there's an increasing pessimism about America's future, which, you know, it is so unfortunate. Maybe, you know, I understand how people arrive at that. But I guess what I would say is that, you know, this is not sort of pretend democracy, pretend republic, where, you know, we're just, this is playtime. And at the end, no matter how badly it goes, we'll just go back to normal. No, this is the real deal. You know, countries rise and fall, they come apart, they're formed, they come apart. And if we're not careful, we can lose the republic. Our founders understood what a fragile experiment it was. And we've come close to losing it in the past. We can come close, and I believe we are, to losing it again. So my hope is that a majority of Americans, certainly a majority of Utahns for the purposes of our race here, recognize that the stakes are so incredibly high that we have to take this moment in our nation's history very, very seriously. That's what the January 6th committee is about. And I think that it is, you know, that's the, I think their work is in part the reason why almost 40% of the Republicans voted to replace Mike Lee in the Republican primary. You know, your listeners, I'm sure, know that primary voters of any party are more more loyal to
a little bit more partisan than
the general election voters of that party. Right. So for 40% of Utah's Republicans voting against Mike Lee, a 12-year incumbent in this last primary, I think is, you know, reflects the fact that many Utahns, many Republicans and others understand that the stakes are so high right now. This is not a moment where, you know, loyalty to party should come first. We have to stand up and put country over party. That's what you see that committee doing on the Democratic side and on the Republican side. That is, they are setting an example for the kind of America that we must have. In fact, you know, Michael, I've been thinking a lot about my service in the agency recently. You know, I served on teams of people after 9/11. We were out searching for and, you know, taking out terrorist leaders, you know, senior Al-Qaeda leaders. And that's what our jobs were. And our teams were, you know, they people from all walks of life. You know, I, you know, met, you know, Will Hurd, you know, for example, former congressman, he was on, you know, one of my teams. People from, you know, different racial, ethnic backgrounds, religious backgrounds, people who had different political ideas, I realize now, you know, didn't realize it then. But that was the point. Never once did I nudge the guy or gal next to me and say, okay, you know, wait a second, before we go do this thing, I need to know, what party are you a member of? Or who did you vote for in the last election?
Hey, who'd you vote for?
You know, it never happened. It never happened. Not a single time. For us, it was enough to know that we were committed to our core values as a country, that we're created free and equal. It was enough to know that we were committed to our democracy. Right. And that was all we needed to know. We were willing to put our lives on the line for each other and for the country. That we got to get back to that. And you don't have to be a CIA operative, undercover operative in the Middle East running covert counterterrorism operations to take that approach. It's the same approach we should all have when we're walking down the street talking to our neighbors, is that there's far more that unites us than divides us. The country right now is in jeopardy, and fixing it depends on us having goodwill for all, being united around our commitment to the country and our core values and to truth and decency. That's where we have to start. And this coalition in Utah is about that.
Well, you heard it there, folks. You heard it. And you can see why the people of Utah have responded the way they have so far to your campaign. Evan McMullen, candidate for the U.S. Senate in the great state of Utah. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Folks, you can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan McMullen. Check out his website where I would encourage you to find a way to support. That's also at www.evanmcmullen.com. You know, check out what he's laying out there for the people of Utah, because remember, he'll be one of 100 and, you know, effectively a U.S. Senator for all of us. Because that's how it works. You know, you may represent the state of Utah, but your votes impact everybody. And your leadership has a profound impact on the country. So we're excited about it, about what you're doing. It is an important, impressive effort that I think a lot more people, as we certainly get into the throes of a general campaign in September and October, we'll gravitate towards. And I wish you the best, my friend.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate your leadership and the opportunity to chat today.
Dude, I'm just a brother in the room, right? You know, I'm just happy to be here. That's what we do. So that does it for this this time together, folks. Thanks again so much for being a part of the Michael Steele podcast and our efforts. Don't forget to check me out on Twitter at Michael Steele. Certainly our podcast Twitter account at Steele_podcast. Go there and check it out. And don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. That's always helpful on Apple Podcasts. It makes me feel good and all yummy inside. And it helps more people find the work that we're doing so we can have conversations with great friends like Evan McMullen. Until next time, be safe, be well, enjoy the summer.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.